You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
California has a $2.2 trillion economy, the seventh largest in the world. But the Golden State may not be glittering as much these days because for the past 3 years, California has experienced the most severe drought of the last century. One recent scientific study found that the current drought is the worst actually in 1,200 years. What does the prolonged drought mean for the state and for the entire country? Well, in a series of articles called The Parched West, the New York Times has explored the issues of water shortage in California and other western states. Times journalist Nelson Schwartz and the paper's graphics editor, Hyun Park, are part of the team working on the series, and you can find links to the stories on our show page. I'm very pleased that it brings Nelson Schwartz and Hyun Park to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Great to be here.
Nelson, Governor Jerry Brown ordered a 25% cut in water consumption. How are Californians responding?
Well, I think everybody knows the situation is serious, whether it's, you know, 1,000 years or 1,200 years or even just a four-year drought. You know, it's kind of obvious that the situation is critical. I think there's only so much you can do in terms of mandates and restrictions. I mean, the bottom line is water is priced very cheaply in most parts of the state, both for residential customers and for farmers, and people have used it accordingly. When something's cheap, people tend to use a lot of it.
Well, we often hear about the north-south divide in California. Is there also a divide here between the cities and the more rural areas?
Yes. I mean, agricultural consumers, like farmers, use about 80% of the water, the surface water, and residential users are about 20%. So, you know, overwhelmingly goes to the agriculture sector. On the other hand, there's a lot of tension because the farmers say, look, if someone cuts back at home so their lawn is brown or their car is dirty, but, you know, if we don't get our water, then we lay farm workers off, we don't grow crops, and, you know, we don't make money. So it's much easier for residential users to cut back. So there's a big tension in California right now.
Are the new rules mandatory or voluntary, like some past measures?
They are mandatory, and people are forbidden for doing things like watering lawns more than a couple of times a week, from washing cars, you know, all that kind of stuff, which is a big, big lifestyle adjustment. I mean, if you go to California, you see big green lawns. You see golf courses in the desert around Palm Springs. I mean, in San Diego, one thing I'm intrigued by is people have kind of mini orchards in very wealthy areas, you know, which sounds very nice, but unfortunately walnuts and peaches and almonds and having that in your backyard takes up a lot of water.
Aren't there some major exemptions to the restrictions? What percentage of California residents or businesses are subject to the restrictions? Which ones aren't?
Well, basically, residential consumers this applies to. It does not apply to agricultural consumers. So basically, right now, the farm sector, they've fallowed about 5% of their land, you know, of about 500,000 acres. So they are doing things, but the restrictions from the governor apply to residential consumers, people like you and me. It does not apply to the agricultural sector.
And with the exemptions factored in, how much of a cut does his order really amount to?
Well, it depends on how much water you're using. I mean, some communities are going to have to, like Beverly Hills, are going to have to cut something like 35% of their water use. Others that have sort of been more efficient and sort of ahead of the game, like San Francisco, probably have to cut more like 10 to 15%, and you sort of end up with that 25% reduction you mentioned.
And then we are coming to the fire season. When does that begin?
Yeah.
And is that likely to be worse this year because of water?
Well, the state is really, really dry, as you mentioned. And remember, this is the fourth year of the drought, so this isn't new. It's very, very dry. I mean, usually the rainy season ends around now, maybe a little bit later, but it really hasn't rained much at all. What rain there was kind of ended in March, and you normally have a big, big snowpack up in the north, and that's sort of nature's reservoir. The water is stored in snow up in the mountains. It melts. It runs downhill. They move it to Southern California. But unfortunately, there's almost no snow on the mountain.
Hey, Yoon, the Times published an interactive graphic detailing water use across the state. How easy is it to get data on water use or how consumption is changing?
Well, starting in September, the 400 water districts in California that supply water to cities and towns were required to report residential per capita use daily. So we have data starting from September, and every month the State Water Board has been posting this data on their website. So it's pretty easy to get this data now. It wasn't available before, but they're using the first data that was available in September as a base for deciding which communities are going to have to cut 10% to 35%.
Aren't there areas where consumption has actually increased over the past 2 years?
Yes. In general, what we found was that the Bay Area had decreased their usage compared to 2 years ago by about 18%. But many areas of in Southern California, like San Diego and the Inland Empire, actually had increase in usage.
And aren't there areas that aren't metered?
Yes, there are some areas, especially in the Central Valley. Fresno and Sacramento are among them that don't have meters. And there are also some communities in the Central Valley where water prices are flat. So no matter how much water you use, you have a flat fee.
Do you know whether there are problems of hidden consumption of residents or businesses trying to evade monitoring and regulations?
I'm not sure about that, actually.
You were talking about, in some cases, people, old regulations, Nestle's bottles water. And I gather that their agreement expired 27 years ago or so. That's what the Desert Sun says, that that they have permits that expired 27 years ago. So how have federal or state agencies been monitoring that kind of use of water? Do you know?
I'm not sure, Nelson. Do you know about this?
Basically, industrial users they pay more than farmers, but generally it's something that the regulators have not focused on at all, and that's whether you're Intel making chips or you're Nestle bottling water. What's one thing that's interesting to me is you think about how little people pay for water at home, or farmers pay, relatively to what they pay for a bottle of Nestle bottled water. And the problem is, though, there have been, you know, local water boards and mayors and supervisors know that when rates have been raised, they've gotten voted out in the past. And there's a lot of fear of the electorate for good reason.
The Desert Sun reported the Nestle story. They also said that one area plotted on the New York Times map, the Cucamonga Valley Water District near San Bernardino, is also drawing water under an expired permit and then selling it to Nestle. Now, go ahead.
You know, part of the problem, too, is there's, you know, the market is very shadowy, or it really isn't an established free market for water. There are deals between irrigation districts, between cities, maybe between a local area and a bottler. But it's not like you can price, you know, you'll see prices quoted, but there really isn't a market as such like there would be for gasoline or oil, say.
Mark Bittman has an op-ed piece in today's Times in which he argues that the solution lies with agriculture, that more water was used to grow almonds in 2013 than it was used by all the homes and businesses in San Francisco and Los Angeles put together, and that growing alfalfa uses more water in total than any other crop, even more than almonds. And he says that since most of the almonds and alfalfa are exported, it means, in effect, we are exporting water.
I mean, you might say that about anything we make. I mean, we live in a global economy. The American agricultural sector is extremely competitive. I don't think we want to do – I cover economics here. I don't think we want to do anything to, you know, kill the agriculture sector. What is true is that, you know, flood irrigation is still used in many parts of the state as opposed to drip irrigation, which is much, much more efficient. The other part of the equation, you know, where Mark is dead on, is in terms of alfalfa, which is a low-value crop. So if you're using water to grow something high-value like almonds, it's sort of like Intel making chips. I mean, they can afford to pay more. That's a smart use of water. The problem with alfalfa, it's a low-value crop. However, in fairness to the farmers, it's very difficult for them to sell the water that they have rights to. Number two, if they don't use it, there are some provisions of like a use it or lose it kind of situation. So if they say, okay, I'm not going to use it, I'm going to be a good guy and save the water, they could see their allotment go down and, you know, to the next guy who is willing to use it.
Mark Bittman also argues that it's really a matter of federal policy, that things like lettuce should be grown in states where there's more water and richer soil than the California desert. But that land is usually used to grow soy and corn because of federal policies.
Yeah, I'm a little leery of, you know, basically having government tell farmers what to grow. I mean, even if it makes sense. And
but don't they already, because they subsidize corn?
There are subsidies, but we could talk till we're blue in the face about what farmers should or should not grow. I just don't think politically it's ever going to go anywhere. I mean, if you thought Obamacare was a big battle, try telling farmers what to grow.
I gather that the farm lobby is very powerful in California.
Very, very. I mean, what's interesting is it's a very small part of the economy, maybe 2%. But it's very visible. It has deep roots. I mean, California was an agricultural state long before it was a tech powerhouse or an energy powerhouse or any of those things.
Why should New Yorkers or anyone in states that have enough water care?
Well, we get a tremendous amount of the fruits and vegetables in winter and in summer come from the Central Valley of California. I was looking for avocados the other day for my daughter, and they came from California. I noticed that the strawberries come from California, all sorts of stuff that we rely on to be on our shelves. And, you know, many people prefer to get stuff from the U.S. That's where it comes from. It's geographically, it's not a huge area, but that it's very productive.
If the drought persists, could there be a measurable effect on the nation's GDP?
Not on their GDP, just because, you know, agriculture today is a pretty small portion. As I mentioned, in California's economy, it's only about 2%. On the other hand, you know, food prices, despite what you may think, have actually been something that's gone down over time as sort of the portion of our income that we spend on food is at a very low level historically. We used to spend much more of our income on food than we do now. So, you know, they're growing more with fewer people on you know, sort of less area than back in the old days, with, you know, which is a good thing. On the other hand, it is very water intensive, as you mentioned, as Mark wrote about.
Now, your map notices that in the Central Valley, some residents don't have water meters. The Coachella Valley is labeled as a retirement destination, and its water district used over 1.7 billion, with a B, gallons of water in 1 month. Why is water consumption so high there?
In areas like the Coachella Valley or, you know, parts of San Diego County, they use a lot of water because the lots tend to be big and the weather is hot. So climate, you know, lot size, type of homes, those things are all factors that, you know, contribute to water usage.
There was an NPR story recently on this, and people in California were really upset by one of the graphics. And when we come back from taking a little break, we'll talk about that very striking photograph. Did you have to play a role in putting that on the front page?
Which one?
It was we saw development with a lot of green, and then we saw an equal amount of desert right next to it. There was a straight line that separated the two.
Oh, actually, I didn't really have anything to do with that one.
But it upset a lot of people. We're talking with Heyun Park and Nelson Schwartz of the New York Times. The Times has been running a series of articles and op-eds. In fact, today's lead story in the Science Times also deals with the drought in California and the West. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Heyun Park and Nelson Schwartz talking about a series of articles under the general title, The Parched West, that the New York Times has been publishing. Heyun, the Times map seems to show that even areas that have historically had lots of water, like Northern California, are in drought. Is the drought extending all the way up to Oregon?
I think the drought is basically affecting all of the West. I think it's particularly worse in the Southwest.
I would assume New Mexico and Arizona.
Mm-hmm. And Texas as well. You know, we've done some stories on Texas. Mm-hmm. But I think the California story is basically, you know, bringing a lot of attention to the drought issue, you know, as a whole.
I guess Oregon is spared a bit because there's so much rainfall there. Anyway, you were talking about another map that you were working on?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a map, but we actually started some research trying to look at the top commodities produced in California to figure out how much of California's water is consumed by people outside the state. And that sort of gets at what you were asking earlier, why people in New York should actually care, because by consuming the avocados and strawberries and lettuce that are produced in California and almonds, you know, California is a sole producer of almonds, you are basically, you know, consuming a lot of California water.
Could almonds be grown elsewhere? Do we know?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if almonds can be grown elsewhere.
I would assume that there are all sorts of areas that have a lot of rich soil and water still available to them throughout the Midwest and the East. That are not really being used all that well. We seem to have moved everything into California and Florida and ignored the local farm capabilities. And I guess that's the reason why the locavore movement has become a big thing today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, California basically is the largest producer of nuts and of fruits and a lot of the vegetables.
I've met some of the nuts from California.
Yeah, pistachios, walnuts. It's not just almonds. A lot of this is grown in California, and California is basically the sole producer of this and provides, you know, the bulk of it for the nation.
I mentioned that photograph that accompanied a Times story. Beautiful green neighborhoods walled off from what looks like desert. Where do they get the water to turn desert into oasis, Nelson?
It's a mix. Some comes from groundwater, which, you know, you're pumping out the aquifers, which have seemed like, a limitless source, which they are not. The groundwater tables are dropping.
And isn't the land also sinking in some cases?
Yes. I mean, yes is the short answer to that. I mean, it's a real problem, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's something economists call, the tragedy of the commons, in the sense that I pump a lot of water and, you know, it doesn't really hurt me and, you know, it doesn't hurt anyone individually, but it hurts all of us together. And that's a real problem to get people to change their behavior. And then the other substantial part of the water comes from the mountains in the north. And, you know, from that snowpack, it melts, and it's moved using a lot of energy great distances from the north to the south of California.
If not for all the irrigation, what kind of climate would these areas have? Obviously, the snowpack on the mountains is being blamed on climate change. But what about the rest of these places? Would it be arid or even desert?
These are what are called semi-arid places. I mean, in terms of the Central Valley, I was comparing the amount of rain they get in Fresno with the amount of rain they get in parts of New Mexico, and it's about the same, about 10 or 11 inches a year. And Fresno has depended a lot on groundwater, but again, the water table is dropping, and the water gets saltier, and you get contaminants, and it's a real problem. I would just add, in terms of growing stuff elsewhere, the issue becomes, you know, everybody, you know, likes the locavore movement, but at the same time, we want strawberries on our shelves in the winter, or, you know, almonds all year long. And the other part of it is, okay, let's say we moved the almond trees in South America or China, wherever, you'd be expending tremendous amounts of energy and big carbon footprint on moving that food even further. So there's a lot of, you know, kind of checks and balances and compromises that have to be made in sort of understanding this.
A piece by Henry Fountain on the front page of today's Science Times notes that Governor Brown said, "This is the new normal and we'll have to learn to cope with it." But scientists suggest that this is an old normal, the way things were 1,200 years ago and for a long time before that.
Absolutely. You know, whether it's caused by humans or, you know, it's a huge issue of, you know, sort of greenhouse gases and global warming and man-made climate change, even if you set that aside, climate changes. And there are big historical cycles where it can be warmer for years. You know, in the Middle Ages, between 1100 and 1300, they grew wine very successfully in the south of England. When it was warm, then it got colder and it moved to France.
And now they're growing it there again.
As it gets warmer, exactly. But the problem is these cycles can last hundreds of years, and we kind of got used to what there's a famous book about California, Cadillac Desert, and we sort of got used to this, okay, let's live in the desert and have a really green lawn and go play golf.
Is there a scientific consensus on how to deal with this, even if there isn't a political one?
I mean, the simple answer is we have to use less water. I mean, that's the fact. I mean, many people don't want to hear that. Many people want to argue about global warming or what the cause of it is. My feeling is, you know, we can argue for, you know, years about causes, but the fact is the rain hasn't fallen. And the fact is, you know, the water table is dropping, you know, reservoirs are running dry, there's no snow on the mountains. No matter what the cause is, we have to start taking action now. We can't wait to sort of come to some kind of, you know, perfect conclusion.
The Sunday Times ran a story on plants to desalinate seawater. Isn't desalinization expensive and also harmful to the environment?
Well, it's very expensive, and there's going to be an issue when it comes time. You know, people have put in about $1 billion into these desal plants, and the problem is the investors want to recover the capital they've invested, which is reasonable, maybe make a little profit. I think they're going to have a real problem. Let's say these things do get built. When it comes time to sell the water at a high price to the local water authority, I think customers are going to say, I don't want some investor making money off the drought. That's the first problem. And then, yes, it's very energy intensive. So you've got that carbon footprint kind of issue.
My guests are Nelson Schwartz and Heyun Park of the New York Times. We're talking about the series of articles in the Times called under the overall title, The Parched West. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Last summer, California's Water Authority declared that wasting water like hosing a sidewalk was a crime. Do you know whether rulings like that are being respected? And what are the penalties for noncompliance?
I mean, there are big fines, and I think they're going to rely on people, you know, phoning in their neighbors or, you know, my next door neighbor's, he's washing his car. I mean, you know, that's effective maybe in the short term, but ultimately, in looking at other cities, which I'm looking at other cities across the West, the cities that have been able to save the most water and change their behavior were the ones where prices went up. And that's ultimately the only thing that affects consumption.
Las Vegas, Nevada has paid homeowners and businesses to pull out their lawns. What positive incentives are being offered to residents or businesses in California?
Utilities in Southern California are paying people to kind of get rid of the turf, put in cacti and desert plants and, you know, all that kind of thing, which, again, makes a lot of sense. From what my understanding is, people have definitely responded, and some of the utilities, you know, their budgets for these programs, you know, was rapidly eaten up as people took them up on their offer.
And some communities have actually come up with very creative ways of getting people to conserve. Like Santa Cruz, for example, last year started a conservation effort where they put people on rations. And if somebody went over their allotment, then they were, you know, they had to either pay a fine or go to a water school, you know, similar to, you know, attending a traffic school for getting a speeding ticket. I think they...
But that's metered water, right?
Yes, that is metered water. But they've also, you know, like Irvine, for example, they also determine how much water each family is allowed to use based on household size, based on your lot size. So some of these communities have already, you know, put in place some of these conservation measures.
The reason I ask is think about human nature. New York City has rules prohibiting stores from keeping their doors open when their air conditioning is on. They're ignored because the city doesn't adequately enforce those rules. Is California doing a better job of enforcement?
I think some parts are doing, you know, better than others. And even L.A., you know, when you look at L.A. as a county, the water usage numbers are very varied. Some of the poor areas tend to use less, actually, and some of the wealthier ones tend to use more. But L.A. City actually has had a water conservation ordinance since 2009, and some of that has been effective. You know, residents are only allowed to water their lawns, you know, 3 times a week, and they're banned from watering when it rains.
Jay Famiglietti, a scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, has warned that California has about 1 year of water left. He said, quote, California has no contingency plan for a persistent drought like this one, let alone a 20-plus year mega drought, except apparently staying in emergency mode and praying for rain. That's kind of scary. A field poll found that 94% agree that the drought is serious. 61% favor voluntary reductions. And of course, voluntary reductions are usually not enough.
Yeah, and I think the reason that Governor Brown, you know, decided that he needed mandatory, he needed to make this mandatory is because he had voluntary voluntary reduction mandate in place in 2014, and that he felt like that wasn't really working.
When we've had a water shortage in New York, and we've had a number of them over the past, voluntary reductions did seem to work. And by the way, that there is all sorts of disparities. New York is much more water efficient, partly because our infrastructure has been fixed. What's the infrastructure like in California? Is there a lot of leakage?
It's Nelson. Yeah, there's quite a bit of leakage, but I'd also keep in mind that, you know, places where, you know, urban areas use a lot less water simply because we don't have lawns. I mean, I live in an apartment building. More than half of water for residential users is used outside the house. So, you know, less than half is inside, and of that, drinking water is a very small amount. So, you know, keep that in mind. So if you don't have a lawn or an outside or a backyard, you're going to use a lot less water, which is one reason why San Francisco has been so, you know, efficient compared to, say, Beverly Hills.
Almost 39 million people live in California, twice New York State's population. What effect could the drought have on the state's population growth, which it's depended upon for so many years?
Well, I think, you know, we wrote a story about a week and a half ago, and, you know, people have predicted the end of California and the end of the California dream for years. My sense is it will not stop growing because of this. I mean, California has always found a way to adapt, whether it was high fuel prices or earthquakes, you know, the sort of the implosion of a lot of defense manufacturing jobs in Southern California. I mean, California reinvents itself, which I think it will, but people are going to really have to make a lifestyle adjustment, and I'm including farmers and agriculture as well as homeowners in that.
Fracking has also become an issue, hasn't it, because it requires so much water?
Right. In terms of the water typically used in fracking is not necessarily the same potable water coming down from the mountain. They can use water that comes up with the oil and reinject it, but absolutely. I mean, in the big picture, that's an issue. But again, Americans like to drive. We like our gasoline. We like to water our lawns. I mean, my real feeling is that, you know, people have to sort of take a good hard look in the mirror on this one. And I'll just add that, you know, several places in California have tried to raise rates, tried to put in, you know, more sensible pricing schemes, and it's been voted down.
In fact, when the Sierra Club tweeted about a Reuters report that said that fracking used 70 million gallons of water over the past year, 70 million, hundreds of people responded angrily about water use for fracking. There are people who are concerned in that way. Hyun, the Times map seems to show a rough donut around Los Angeles, average use amid high use. Is there variation in water use even across a city like Los Angeles? Is it a matter of poorer neighborhoods versus wealthier neighborhoods?
Yeah, actually, there was a recent UCLA study, maybe 2013 or 2014, that found that not only did wealthier areas of Los Angeles use more water, but they also cut back less during droughts because residents were not as sensitive to fines and to rising water bills.
And you mentioned that San Francisco and Santa Cruz use less water. Is that also just simply because the weather is cooler?
Yeah, climate has a lot to do with it. And for San Francisco, like Nelson was saying earlier, they have a lot of the housing stock is very different. They have multifamily, you know, dwellings. They don't have a lot of outdoor irrigation. So that doesn't require as much water.
The graphics were a key part of the Times reporting. Is water use across the state the kind of problem where graphics are really necessary to convey what's happening?
I think this drought, water usage, this sort of topic really lends itself to graphics. It's a very visual story. Without a map, you wouldn't really be able to see the regional variations.
Do you know whether the state officials of California are mapping things as thoroughly as the New York Times is?
I haven't seen anything mapped up. I mean, they've been posting their raw data, but they haven't really been mapping this. I think the Pacific Institute, which is a research organization there, has done something similar, but not to the degree that we've done.
During New York water shortages, people joked about showering together and things like that. According to the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, between one half and three quarters of residential water use is in the bathroom.
You know, I'm not sure about the breakdown, you know, for the internal use, but basically what the California officials have said was that 55 gallons per person per day is sort of the standard measure. So anything outside of that, you can see as being used for outdoor irrigation. So when you're seeing, you know, 200, 300 gallons per day per person, that's basically a lot of outdoor watering.
Now, just one more thing before you guys go, Nelson. The national average of water use is a lot less in California, about 60 to 70 gallons per person per day. So there are people in California using five times the national average.
Absolutely. And what's scary, though, is there are parts of California where they're using five times the national average, but they pay a quarter of the national average. So that's the really perverse thing here. I mean, that's not as bad as in San Francisco or L.A., but we were talking about Sacramento, Modesto, Fresno. They use a lot more water and they pay a lot less.
My great thanks to both of you for being on our show today. Nelson Schwartz and Heyun Park of the New York Times. It's a kind of scary story.
It is.
And
things
are
going to happen.
Do you see a solution in sight?
Things are going to have to change. I mean, they're either going to change because the water runs out and you have a real crisis, or because we adapt and people pay more and sort of act accordingly.
Are we likely to see water being moved around the country the way oil and coal are?
No, it's too expensive energy-wise, and it's just not practical. I mean, again, the only water we're going to find is through conservation.
Thank you both again.
Thank you.
Thank you.